Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Queen of Cats by John G. Harkness. Narrated by Tim Campbell. Part 1. Betrayal. Chapter 1. Romarin's feet slid on the slick cobblestones as he rounded the corner, threatening to send him sprawling into the street and under the wheels of a cartload of whiskey barrels. Scrambling madly and bowling over a rotund matron loaded down with laundry, the slight thief regained his footing and dashed off down an unlit alley. He ducked into a darkened doorway as four mailed, spear-toting guards barreled down the street. Romarin sagged with relief, but kept to the shadows as he crept slowly to the mouth of the alley. Romarin peered back the way he'd run, ducking back into the shadows as two more heavy-set guards came into view at more a trot than a sprint. They clattered past, chainmail and breastplate shattering the stillness of the night with their cacophonous rattle. Romarin stayed frozen until they were long past, then exited the alley and walked back the way he'd come, affecting a casual swagger to hide the adrenaline-fueled trembling in his legs. "That was close, Remoron." The voice in his head was dry as burnt toast, and Romarin glanced down at his belt. The black hilt of a dagger hung there, a ruby set into the pommel. In the heart of the ruby, a small light flickered as if there were a flame dancing within the gem.
"Trand, you're back. I thought I left you in the belly of the first guard," Romarin whispered, long practice allowing him to converse with a dagger with the barest hint of moving lips.
"I'm not that easy to get rid of. We're stuck with each other until you're dead or I'm released from this stupid curse.
Or I smelt you down into earrings for that good-looking tavern wench I met last week. What was her name again?"
The dagger didn't answer. Grateful for the rare silence, Romarin turned a corner off the main merchant's thoroughfare and headed toward the poorer section of Bravis, capital city and principal port of the kingdom of Viosia. Here on the cheap streets, one could find a pub with a room to let, a man in an alley with goods of undisclosed provenance, or a good street brawl, if that's what one was looking for. Tonight, Romarin was in search of none of that. He found what he was looking for just a few short blocks from the merchant's district in a nondescript building nestled between a bustling pub and a shuttered laundry. He knocked twice on the door, waited for three breaths, then knocked twice more. The door opened, and a wizened man of maybe 5 feet in height stepped back to allow the thief entrance.
"Welcome back, Romarin. I trust you have my goods."
"I have the jewels, Salvar. I assume you have my money?"
"I've everything you're entitled to, thief. Hand over my gem and I'll fetch your payment."
Something in the little man's tone rung false with Romarin, and out of the corner of his eye he saw the gem flash brighter than normal in the dagger's hilt.
"Not to be suspicious, Salvar, but let's see the payment first."
Romarin stepped slowly back until he could feel the door against his back heel. He couldn't hear anything out of the ordinary, and that alarmed him even further. At this time of night, the tavern next door should be raucous, full of the sounds of drunken fighting and off-key warbling from the horrible bard they kept chained up by the fireplace. But tonight? Nothing. Not a scrape of a chair, not a single slurred bellow for more ale, not even the twang of an out-of-tune lute.
"Something's amiss here."
The voice in his head now sounded worried, as though the dagger actually cared what happened to Romarin.
"Really? And here I thought the tingling along my spine just a draft," Romarin whispered.
Salvar, for his part, was playing the role of affronted partner to the hilt.
"Why, Romarin, I'm amazed at your lack of trust. How many times have we done business? How many times have I moved merchandise of questionable ownership for you? And how many times have I given you fair market value for goods that I couldn't move for weeks, even months? And now you choose to mistrust me? I may as well turn my back on you so you can pull the dagger out and stab me through the heart again."
"It's not that I don't trust you, Salvar. It's that I don't trust anyone. A trusting thief very quickly ends up as a dead thief, and I have no interest in becoming a dead thief. Now where's the money?"
The corrupt little pawnbroker fidgeted for a long moment before reaching behind the counter. His hand came up with a dagger, and Salvar let out a yell.
"Help!"
Romarin whirled around and shot the bolt on the door. He grabbed the heavy wooden plank that leaned against it and set it into the two iron holders, securing the front entrance for a few moments at least. He turned back to Salvar and drew his own dagger.
"You know you can't best me in a knife fight, Salvar. Why even try?"
"Because I'm being paid very handsomely to deliver your dead body, and if I don't kill you, I don't get paid,"
Salvar said, waving his dagger around in an almost convincing display of knife work. I admire a man who sticks to his principles, Salvar, even if those principles are killing me. For that, I'll let you die quickly. Remarin changed his grip and flicked the dagger across the room. The ruby-hilted blade tumbled end over end to bury itself in the hollow of Salvar's throat. Sometimes it's very useful having an enchanted weapon around.
Are you claiming that there are times that it is not useful to have me around?
Tran's voice echoed in Remarin's mind as he crossed the room to pull the dagger out of Salvar and wipe it on the dying man's tunic. Yeah, Tran, like when you're talking. I could definitely live without talking to my weapons. You're just mad that I've got a bigger vocabulary than you do, and there are two of them behind the door. I knew that, Remarin grumbled, pulling open the door that led to Salvar's storeroom. A pair of surprised mercenaries stood there, hands on sword hilts and shields at their sides. Remarin drew his rapier and ran the first one through the throat in one fluid motion. The second charged the slight thief, knocking him over and adding to his growing collection of bruises. Remarin grabbed the man's ankle and dragged him to the floor before he could reach the front door and open it for his reinforcements, then clambered up the man's back and slit his throat with a spare dagger he drew from his boot.
Is that all of them?
Remarin gasped. Trand remained silent.
Trand, are there any more of them?
Nothing. Remarin sighed.
Fine, I'm sorry. I didn't know there were two of them in the storeroom. I could only hear one. You saved my ass. Again, are you happy now?
No, but if you let me stab someone else, I might be able to recover from your appalling lack of faith in me. There are four outside, but no more in the building.
Then I've got enough time to loot the place and sneak out the back way,
Remarin replied. He wiped his dagger down, slid it home in his boot, sheathed his rapier, and commenced to pilfering any valuables the mercenaries might have had on their persons. He gathered up a couple of necklaces, three good rings, and one jeweled earring, understanding that most mercenaries kept their savings in jewelry, since it was easily portable. Salvar's body proved as worthless as the man's loyalty, yielding nothing worth stealing, but Remarin knew where the pawnbrokers stored his gems and gold. The thief moved soundlessly up the stairs to Salvar's bedroom and flung open the door. He stepped quickly to the center of the room, flicked back the corner of the rug, and pried up the false floor at the edge of the bed. He'd cased Salvar's home and shop many years ago when they first began to do business, just in case something like this ever happened. Better safe than sorry, I always say.
No, you don't. You always say something remarkably stupid, like, what's the worst thing that could happen? Well, you could end up dead or trapped inside a magical dagger for 1,000 years. That's what could happen.
Shut up, Trand,
Remarin said, filling his purse with jewels and what coins he had room for. He barely felt the air shift above him, but dove for the floor in time to avoid the brass candlestick swinging at his head. The startled burglar flipped onto his back and got his arms up in time to block the return strike before his brains got smeared all over the floor. The blow had little force behind it, and Remarin easily disarmed his attacker and sprang to his feet. He drew back a fist to continue the fight, but froze when he saw the dirty face of a young boy staring up at him. Chapter 2
What in the seven hells is this?
That is a child, Remoron.
I hate you. You know that, right?
Remarin hissed. He turned his attention back to the child that had almost bashed his brains out.
Who are you? What are you doing here? Why did you attack me?
I'm Kit,
the child answered, jaws set and fists tight at his sides.
Salva had me tied up here, dunno why, and I attacked you because that's what you do to thieves. You bash 'em.
Well, let's have a little less bashing and a little more talking.
Remarin looked the boy up and down. His blonde hair was dirty and longer than was the fashion, and his clothes were little more than rags. But there was intelligence shining in those blue eyes, and a ferocity that Remarin found, well, amusing, if he were to admit it to himself.
Nothing to talk about. Salvar's dead. There are men beating down the front door to kill you, and I think they'll probably do that or worse to me. Can we run away now?
Remarin revised the boy's age upwards at his words, then heard the loud crash of a door splintering downstairs.
Yes, I think running away now is a grand idea. Do you have good boots?
No, I was barefoot when Salvar nabbed me.
Kit pointed down, and Remarin looked at delicate feet that didn't look like they'd ever run barefoot before. Oh well, the child was about to get a survival lesson.
That's fine, we're taking the high road, and barefoot is better than bad shoes up there. Now come on.
Romarin flung open the window and looked out into the street. So far, their little adventure hadn't attracted any outside attention. More likely, Salvar had paid off anyone he thought would scream for the watch, so as long as the fighting stayed in the house, no one was going to say anything. He stepped out onto the narrow ledge and stretched for the eaves. His fingers found the slimmest perches, and he pulled himself up onto the roof. He lay flat on his stomach, reaching down for the boy.
"Kit, can you grab my hand?" Romarin whispered.
I think so.
The child's voice quavered. Romarin didn't blame him. If he slipped, the boy would fall to a hopefully quick and definitely painful death on the cobblestones below. Kit stood on tiptoes on the ledge, then on one foot as he strained to grab the thief's dangling hands. Then their fingers locked, and Romarin pulled the boy to safety.
"You're heavier than you look," Romarin panted as they lay on the roof.
"You're just weaker than you thought," Kit replied.
The boy scrambled to his feet and said,
"Which way?"
Romarin pulled himself up to a crouch beside Kit and pointed off to the east.
"That way. We'll follow this line of buildings all the way to the docks, then hop over a couple of alleys and into the attic of a man I know."
"You mean a thief?" Kit said.
Romarin looked at the boy, startled by the accusation in his eyes.
"Not everyone I know is a thief. This man happens to be a shade, I'll have you know."
Romarin started off across the rooftops, walking toe to heel to keep his steps silent.
"What's a shade?"
Kit asked, matching his steps to the larger man's. Romarin sped up to get ahead of the boy, hoping to hide his flush.
"A shade is someone who buys stolen goods from thieves."
"Oh, but he's not a thief. Oh, no, mustn't think that."
"Shut up, kitten."
"It's Kit. Don't call me kitten."
"If you're going to follow me around like a puppy, I should call you Spot."
"Well, what am I supposed to call you? Mr. Thief seems a little silly."
Romarin held up a hand, and they slowed their march across the rooftops as they crossed a house that the thief knew belonged to a light sleeper with a crossbow and a willingness to punch holes in his own roof in an attempt to skewer squirrels.
"Call me Romarin, Prince of the High Road."
He tried for a grandiose bow, but almost lost his balance on the pitched roof, and had to frantically windmill his arms to regain his balance.
"Call him Remoron, King of the Jackasses."
The boy's eyes flew wide, and he whirled around, looking for the unseen speaker.
"Who said that? Where are you?"
"Wait, you heard that?"
Romarin put out a hand to steady the boy, whose balance had grown precarious, as he looked for the source of the voice in his head.
"Of course I heard it. Someone making fun of your name. But where is he? I don't see anyone."
"He's my dagger," Romarin said simply.
Kit gaped at him, then stared at the dagger with its softly glowing red hilt.
"Your dagger?"
"Yeah. His name is Trant. He's trapped in the dagger for 1,000 years because he managed to irritate a powerful wizard."
"I irritated him. I seem to recall there being two of us in the wizard's tower that night."
"Yes, but I'm not the one trapped inside a knife for an eon," Romarin replied.
"Only because I got caught."
"Proving that I am the Prince of the High Road," Romarin said, bowing. "This time without the balance troubles. But that doesn't explain how you heard Trant talking. Who are you?"
He peered more closely at the child, who ducked his head at the scrutiny.
"I told you. I'm Kit. I'm nobody special. And aren't we still on the roof that you were worried about?"
Romarin's eyes widened as he heard a commotion from below.
"Damn it, run!"
The thief and boy sprinted across the slate roof, sending loose tiles to skitter down the rooftop and shattering the courtyard below. A crossbow bolt erupted through the roof just in front of Kit, causing the boy to skid to a halt and look around wildly.
Romarin dashed back a few steps and grabbed the boy's arm. "Don't stop! He needs time to reload. Better to be somewhere else when he does."
The pair reached the end of the row of connected homes, and Romarin hung a hard left, pulling Kit after him. No longer running across the relatively level ridge beams, now the thief and the boy bounded up and down the pitched sides of roofs and leapt from building to building. Romarin looked back once and was relieved to see the terror in the boy's face had faded to exultation as he reveled in the night's chase.
"This is the best part of the job," he thought. "The night air, the freedom, the cash. The people climbing up on the roof ahead of you with swords they want to chop you into kibble."
Tran's dry voice snapped Romarin back to the task at hand, and he looked ahead at the pair of guards trying to find their footing in their heavy hobnailed boots. The chainmail restricting their movement was bad enough, but they didn't stand a chance of catching anyone with those silly boots on. Romarin reached into a pocket on his pants and pulled out a string of firecrackers, lighting one and flinging the string at the guards.
The small poppers burst into life, blinding the guards and startling them with the flashes and bangs. The first guard snatched the string of explosives out of the air, then threw it back over his shoulder as a pair of firecrackers went off in his hand. He clutched his injured fingers, lost his footing, and tumbled over the edge. Romarin never looked back to see what happened to him, just assumed from the resounding crash from the street below that it didn't end well. The second guard fared a little better, keeping his feet until the firecrackers stopped exploding in his face. By the time the smoke cleared and he could focus on anything other than not falling off the roof, Romarin and Kit were out of sight. The thief and boy sprinted across the rooftops, silent as the night itself. Romarin listened for any other signs of pursuit, but heard nothing. Moments later, he waved Kit to a stop and knelt in a shadowed corner on a sloped rooftop of a nondescript building near the docks. Romarin knocked three times on the roof, waited a moment, then knocked three more times. After a long pause, he repeated the series of knocks once, then twice. Finally, after several minutes of rapping, a section of slate roof several feet away slid open, and a bald head poked out. The old man grinned like a skeleton through a mouth of missing teeth.
"Romarin, are you ever going to learn which section of roof to knock on? You're driving my wife crazy, pounding on the roof of her bedroom."
Romarin dashed over to the man, motioning for Kit to follow. "Gaither, are you ever going to divorce that harpy? You know she hates me and all the rest of your suppliers."
"Aye, but she's got great tracts of land,"
the man finished hurriedly after a glance at the boy.
"Who's a brat?"
"I don't know." "I'm Kit," the boy said, holding out his hand to shake. Gaither shook it, then looked at the boy, brow furrowed.
"You look familiar, boy. Have you been here before?"
"I don't even know where here is, so it's not likely, sir."
The boy slipped past Romarin into the attic. The thief followed, and Gaither closed the roof entrance behind them. The attic was little more than a landing at the top of a flight of stairs. Gaither picked up a lit candle and led the pair down the stairs into a storeroom. This was Gaither's private storeroom, where he received and catalogued his more exotic items, as well as items of undocumented provenance, like the gems that Romarin started pouring out of pouches and pockets.
"Now hold on there, Romarin," the old man protested. "I don't know that I've got any use for all this, much less the time to sort it. Why don't you run this stuff through Salvar? He usually handles your bulk trade. You know I only like dealing in currency or rare artifacts."
"Salvar's dead," Romarin replied, never pausing in the unloading of his packs. "I killed him an hour ago. He betrayed me and this kid to somebody who wants me dead. Don't worry, they're not very good."
"Oh, not good are we talking about?"
Gaither didn't flinch at the news, just started picking up the jewelry and gems Romarin was unpacking, weighing each stone in his hand, then dropping it into a velvet-lined box he pulled down off a shelf. The jewelry he examined more closely, wedging a small glass circle in front of one eye to magnify the details and maker's mark. "They tried to follow me across the rooftops in full armor. It didn't go well," Romarin said. "They're pretty stupid, but the ones in Salvar's place seemed well-equipped."
"Hello, Trend."
The shade nodded at Romarin's belt.
"Hello, Gaither. How's your wife?" "Irritable, so let's try not to cause a disturbance."
"Talk to the idiot that still has arms and legs, as opposed to the idiot trapped inside a dinner utensil. Try to carve a turkey with me. I dare you." "Gaither, what's all this garbage worth?" Romarin waved a hand over the assortment of gems and jewelry scattered across the counter. "Salvar came down with a bad case of the deads before he could pay me for swiping a gem. And now I've got to find some place to foster this kid, too. I need some cash. You know it's all marketable stuff, even the jewelry, so let's skip the part where you lowball me, I threaten you, we argue, and El wakes up and screams at us both, and you finally give me a fair price, so I'll just leave and you can go back to bed. Let's jump right to the fair price bit, and El will never know I was here, which means she'll never know Trand was here, which means she won't be depressed for a week about him being trapped in a dagger, and you get the idea."
"You're a bastard, Romarin."
"And you sell stolen shit for a living. Now that we've got that out of the way, what's it worth?"
20 rolls. That's my best offer."
25, Romarin replied without pause.
"Done."
Gaither handed out 25 octagonal gold coins, then tossed a silver to Kit.
"For luck, boy. You'll need it if you're throwing in with this one. Don't forget what happened to his last partner."
The old man nodded at the dagger flickering on Romarin's belt. "Trand was more than my partner. He was my best friend." "I still am."
"He was my wife's little brother,"
the shade shot back.
"I still am,"
I'll get it fixed, somehow. Romare didn't meet the older man's eyes as he spoke.
Get out. Let me get back to my bed.
Gaither turned a knob by the counter and a piece of paneling slid open into the candle shop that was the legitimate business hiding his less legal enterprise. Romarin and Kit followed him into the front of the shop, then out the front door. Romarin heard the sound of the door locking behind him and a bolt being thrown as he looked up and down the street, making sure they weren't observed. Chapter 3 He looked at the lightning sky to the east and took the boy's elbow.
Come on, kitty cat. We need to find a safe place to rest for the day.
Kit, I told you not to call me that.
Get over it, kid. Let's go.
Romarin led the way through the twisting streets and alleys of the poor quarter, where the streets were so narrow that two wagons could barely pass side by side. And not at all in some places. They passed through the stink of the tannery row, the open market that dominated the poor quarter, until they came out into a wider, cleaner street that bounded on the merchants' quarter. The buildings here were cleaner than the rest of Lowtown, but still shabby. The sky was growing lighter by the moment, and the door of a house near the pair opened, and a nervous-looking man stepped out, looked from side to side, settled on Romarin and Kit, then quickly glanced away as he scurried up the street into the merchants' quarter.
"What is he afraid of?"
Kit asked.
"I'd guess his wife," Romarin said dryly.
"What do you mean?"
The boy looked up at the thief, who just shook his head.
"You'll see, kid."
Romarin went up to the door the man just came out of and knocked softly. Kit stood on the street, looking up at him. After a few moments, a beautiful blonde woman opened the door, her body shrouded in luxurious silks that displayed more than they hid. She smiled at Romarin and threw her arms around him with a high-pitched squeal. She held their embrace for perhaps a second or two longer than absolutely necessary, and Romarin's face was flushed when he turned and gestured to Kit.
"Oh,"
the blonde woman exclaimed when she saw him.
"How adorable. Come in, dear. We'll find the two of you a nice quiet room to rest in."
Romarin and Kit followed the woman inside, and Kit looked around in wonder. Everything was draped in silk and other soft fabrics, even the candle globes. It gave the rooms a gentle, soft feeling like walking through a dream. Everything smelled nice, too.
"What is this place?"
Kit asked.
"Is this an inn?"
Romarin blushed again, and the pretty woman chuckled.
"Not exactly, Kit," the thief said. "People don't usually sleep here. I have a special arrangement with the
proprietress,"
the blonde woman added as Romarin stumbled over his words.
"Proprietress, that's a good one,"
Romarin agreed. "I have a special arrangement that I can rest in one of the unused rooms whenever I need to, in exchange for performing certain errands for the girls that work here."
"What kind of errands? I thought you were a thief,"
Kit asked. "Sometimes people receive services here and don't want to pay for them, or they need to be persuaded to pay. I take care of that."
"Oh,"
Kit said, his voice small.
"So you're a basher?"
"I prefer the term payment specialist."
"Kid's right, you're a basher."
"You keep quiet," Romarin said to his dagger.
"You're a basher with a talking knife,"
Kit said.
"I don't think I like you."
Romarin found himself stung by the child's casual condemnation, and he wasn't sure why, but he found the need to defend himself.
"I don't think I care. I think all I care about is keeping us both alive long enough for me to figure out what to do with you and getting the hell out of town for a little while. I don't know who paid Salvar to kill me, but the fact that there are a lot of people to choose from makes me realize that I should probably be somewhere else for the foreseeable future. But I can't get out of here tonight. I'm tired, I'm hungry, I have to take care of you. So we're sleeping here, and we'll figure everything else out in the morning."
The blonde woman stopped in front of a door at the end of the hall, a small smile playing across her face.
"You shut up, Karin," Romarin said.
He knocked on the door, waited a few seconds, then opened it and walked in. The room was an exquisitely appointed bedroom, with a separate sitting area and a huge canopied bed swathed in silks. The sitting area contained a small two-person sofa, a small table, and a comfortable-looking chair, all in matching dark woods and burgundy cushions. On the table sat a tray with several sandwiches, a bottle of wine, two glasses, and a small glass of cold milk, chilled enough that water droplets were forming on the sides. A beautiful woman in her 30s sat on the sofa in a gown almost the same color as the cushions, but with a brighter, more blood-red tone. Her dark curls spilled down across an expanse of exposed cleavage, and even at the late hour, her face was made up perfectly. Romarin walked in and sat on the couch, reaching for the wine and turning the bottle up. He took a long drink and wiped his mouth with the back of his hand. "Good stuff, Marie. Thanks for the food."
"You're a barbarian, Romarin."
The woman chuckled as she took the bottle from him and poured herself a glass. She looked up at where Kit still stood by the door.
"Come in, child. I don't bite. At least I don't bite babies."
She gave him a grin that seemed a little less innocent than it should be, and Romarin broke out in a laugh.
"Leave him alone, woman. The poor boy's blushing. Come over here, Kit. The food's good, the milk is for you, and we're safe here. Maria's helped me out of a few close spots over the years. I trust her more than anyone." "Anyone still human, he means."
Romarin glanced down at the dagger.
"Yeah, anyone except Trand. Now sit, eat."
The thief took a sandwich and shoved half of it in his mouth, then took another long swallow of wine to wash it down. Marie elbowed him.
"Leave the child alone. He's shy."
Turning her attention back to Kit, she said,
"It's all right, child. I haven't altered the food or drink in any way. If you'd like, I'll taste the milk so you know it's fine."
She smiled at Kit kindly, and he stepped slowly over to the table, looking every second like a scared rabbit.
"No, thank you, Mum. That won't be necessary. If Romarin trusts you, well, he saved me, so I have to trust him."
Kit sat on the edge of the chair and began to eat a sandwich. The boy was obviously ravenous, so once the first sandwich was gone, he looked to Marie, who nodded at him. He almost inhaled the second sandwich, then drank down his milk in two big gulps.
"Thank you, Mum. I appreciate it,"
Kit said when he was finished.
"You're very welcome, young man. What did you say your name was?"
Marie asked.
"It's Kit, Mum. What is this place?"
The boy looked around at the silks and the finery. Marie and Romarin shared a look. Romarin gave a little shrug as if to say, "I'm not telling him," and Marie sighed.
"This is a pleasure house, child."
Kit's face took on a frightened look, and he sprang to his feet.
"A brothel?"
"Yes, son, it's a brothel," Romarin grinned at the boy. "You're a little younger than most of the customers here, but I don't think you need to be quite so alarmed. Sit down, child. No one's going to hurt you."
"But that man, Salva, he talked about trying to sell me to a brothel. He said they'd pay top dollar for—" "I don't want to know what Salva said, child,"
Marie cut in, her voice hard.
"I just want to know that he's dead."
She looked over at Romarin, who nodded.
"Good,"
she continued. Marie looked at Kit with a stern expression.
"Now let me be very clear. I do not keep children in my house, and I don't cater to men that like children. That is abhorrent, and I will not tolerate it. You are as safe here as in your mother's arms, and probably safer. You and Romarin can sleep here tonight, and tomorrow we'll figure out somewhere for you to stay. But I won't be here. I can't have a child roaming about learning things he shouldn't learn at your age. Now you two rest, and I'll be back to bring you some breakfast in the morning. The water closet is next door on the right. Don't go into any other rooms."
Marie stood in a rustle of silk and satin, and swept grandly from the room.
"Thank you for the food,"
Kit said softly to her back as she left.
"Well done, kitten. You just annoyed the woman who was solely responsible for keeping us alive for the next day. Hope she wasn't too offended."
Romarin started taking off his boots, then stood and took off his sword belt. He hung the belt on one of the bedposts, then finished disrobing. The thief stood in the middle of the room in his black leggings and nothing else. Kit could see a long scar across his ribs and a puckered circular scar on one shoulder.
"What?" Romarin asked. "Get undressed, unless you want to sleep in your clothes. I don't care. I'm going to bed."
He climbed into the canopied bed and flopped his head down on one of the pillows.
"Blow out the candle when you're ready to sleep."
Moments later, the thief was snoring. Kit sat up for a long time, wondering exactly what had happened. The night had started ordinarily enough, but veered off course somewhere after dinner.
"Are you going to say something?"
The voice in Kit's head was somehow quieter than other times the dagger had spoken, and he knew that Trand was speaking only to him.
"No,"
Kit whispered.
"Why not? It's not like he'll do anything bad to you. Romoron's a good guy. Why not? It's not like he'll do anything bad to you. Romoron's a good guy, if you're kind of stupid."
"He seems like a good person. but I don't know who I can trust right now. How did you know?
I made a magic, remember?
But I'm not telling him, and I'd really rather you didn't either.
Fine, I'll keep your little secret. But don't...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?